I'm Sharon. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Sharon.
I don't know that I said that I was looking forward to this, but I don't think those were my exact words, but I am grateful to be here. I love this deal. I want to thank Milton for inviting me and the committee. Is this too loud? Okay. And last year was the first time that I came to Mont Eagle, and my sponsor, Mary, spoke. And it was a spiritual experience. When Milton asked me to speak, I feel so inadequate. There's more sobriety in this room than I've ever been in a room in my entire life. I don't get out much, but there's more sobriety in this room than I've ever been in a room with. And last night, as Mary and I were in the lobby, I said, God, you can feel the spirit in here. And she said, yeah. I said, do you feel it? And she goes, yeah. And she said, it's the program. It's in here. And everybody was watching Evel Knievel, and they were, I mean, it had nothing to do with anything, but I could feel it. When we walked into the next room for our open meeting, Arlene shared, and this is like one of these God deals, she said, the spirit that you feel here at Mont Eagle is not the building, and it's not the trees, it's the people. And she said that she had come here before with nobody here, and you didn't feel the spirit, but it's the people. And these are coincidences that I'm aware of now all the time that God's doing for me what I can't do for myself. And then there's this rogue guy walks in with 23 years, and he says he's more enthusiastic about this program than he's ever been in his entire life. And I could feel rogue talk, how excited he was, and that's exactly where I am. I have the passion for Alcoholics Anonymous like this dude does, and I haven't been around half as long, but I'm gonna keep coming back. I would like to thank a lot of people that came here to support me, my sponsor, her sponsor, women I sponsor, women they sponsor, and I know a new meaning of the word we. When I came in, I just thought we meant me and my sponsor, but the longer I stay in this deal, the we gets bigger, and it's a we program, and there's more and more people in my life, but I believe more as I stay in here more. That there is more. And thank my husband. He's never heard me speak, so he may have to get up and leave, but he has to share a lot of me because Alcoholics Anonymous is my passion. I love this deal, and so he's got to share a lot of me because I believe you have to give it away to keep it, and I have a lot of we's in my life, too, and I give it away on a daily basis. So I'm going to start with my story. Nothing I say up here tonight is original. It all came out of this book, or the 12 and 12, or y'all taught it to me, or I heard it on a tape. And if I've experienced it in my life, you're going to hear about it tonight. And I hadn't been around that long, but I do hope I share a lot more about the solution than the problem. My sobriety date is January the 10th of 1990, and my home group is Unity in Memphis. I don't have an exciting drunkalogue. If I did, it probably wouldn't have taken me 25 years to get here, but that's not my experience. I believe for me it took every drink and every day and every year, and it just took me 25 years to get here. And for that today, I'm truly grateful, because if I hadn't had all the drinking, I wouldn't have been willing to do exactly what this little book says precisely how to do. And I needed that pain to be able to do this deal. So here's the beginning. I was born in 53, so I was a baby boomer. I was born in Nashville, middle-class family. My father is an alcoholic who is still practicing with this disease. He's been drinking 58 years. He's in end stages with cirrhosis of the liver now and lives in Nashville. Still married to my mother after 50-something years. And she's still as sick as he is. But I don't blame my disease on that. I'm just saying where I came from. I came from an alcoholic home. I've got a twin and an older brother. My childhood is not exciting. I wasn't abused at all. And all I remember are feelings. I always felt less than. Even as a little child, I didn't fit in. I thought it was because I was fat. I was a twin. My brother was smart. I was dumb. He could tie shoes. I couldn't. He could tell time. I couldn't. My parents were very non-affectionate. I thought it was because they were Yankees and I lived in the South. Until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I was the way I was because of them and those out there. In my whole life, I lived like that. I do remember we watched my parents, being a baby boomer, we didn't have VCRs, but we had reel-to-reel movies, silent. But my dad would pop a Falstaff beer and get a church key, and then me and my brother would crawl to it, and whoever got that first crawled, got there first, got the first sip of beer. And I remember that the sound and the sensation, I liked it. And even hearing a beer pop now, it makes me think of, that's good. But I started drinking when I was 13, and immediately it made me feel at ease. In this big book where it talks about we drank for the effect, immediately that was me at age 13. I wasn't fat anymore. I was smart. I didn't feel like I'd felt before, and it worked. I would drink my father's Seagram 7 after school, a few drinks, and I was okay. I made it to Memphis State in the 70s, and everybody drank, and I fit in. Everybody in the fraternities drank. They had big trash cans full of Purple Passion and full of vodka and orange juice, and I drank till I passed out every time. And I could drink all my dates under the table, and I did it every time. I never started with one drink. I went for the pass out every time. But I always got up and I always went to class. The one good thing from being raised in an alcoholic family is I was a survivor. And if I couldn't do it, it couldn't get done because I had to do it myself because nobody else could do it. And being raised in the family I was at, nobody did it right unless you did it yourself. And so I always got up, always went to class. But I had a good time. As I've stayed in this program longer, it's amazing how my perceptions of the past have changed. I remember going to Fort Lauderdale in the 70s for spring break, and I used to think, God, that was great. You know, everybody's drunk on the beach, and you're just laying there, and nobody knows where they're going, and nobody cares. And now I remember, God, it wasn't so great. You know, people were throwing up in the morning. My perceptions of everything has changed since being in this program. But it worked for me, and I kept going to school. And let's see, I'm going to try to get through this. This is not very exciting. Met my husband in pharmacy school. No, let's see. No, I know what I can tell you. In Memphis State in the 70s, we went to the NCAA. Okay. Now, my parents were of the mindset that girls didn't go to school. They had never heard of Memphis State, and if you didn't go to UT or Vanderbilt, you didn't go to school. So I went to Memphis. I was a rebellious child, too. I forgot about that. But I was a rebellious child, and we never talked about feelings or anything, and I didn't either. But when my twin was going to Knoxville, and my other brother had been to every college in the state of Tennessee, I went to Memphis State, and we went to the NCAA. And that was exciting. We all stayed drunk all the time. Everybody did. We drank every night, and it was fun. I remember they said that I've been told that you cross the line of addiction or the point of no return when you remember your first blackout, and that was in the 70s at Memphis State. I woke up one morning from the dorm, and my whole side was black and blue from the waist down. And I did not remember at all what I'd done the night before. I knew I'd gone to a fraternity party. I knew I'd gone to the basketball game. But from then on, I don't remember what happened. And when they talk about that incomprehensible demoralization in the big book and the Four Horsemen, I had it. You know, my roommate said, God, you had a lot of fun last night. And I said, yeah, I did, didn't I? And she said, yeah. And I'd gotten on the stage at Memphis State with the band, with a tambourine, and had beaten myself to death, but I was part of the band. See, when I drank, I could do anything. I could dance, I could be in a band, I could sing. I wasn't an introverted, shy, little bashful little girl anymore. I came alive, and it worked. Let's see, met my husband after that, and went on to pharmacy school, and he wouldn't let me have fun anymore. And because he could... He picked me up the first night with a bottle of champagne, and we went to the Summit Club. And I got drunk, and we stayed up all night long. And I thought that was great. I had arrived. Now, Jim quit drinking after two drinks, and I'm thinking, God, there's just more for me. I married him 90 days later and went to pharmacy school. And then I had to study. My drinking went to weekends, but I still got up, and I still functioned. I want to say after I got out of school is where it says it got worse. I went from weekends to like every other night because I worked 12-hour days every other day. So the nights I didn't work, I would drink that night because I had to get up the next day, and I always got up. I was a very functioning alcoholic. I got up and I went, and I felt like crap. I remember working in the IV room, and I'd be shaking so bad that the needles, sometimes making these IV bags, would stick in my fingers. But I couldn't stop it. But I kept on drinking. I got arrested going down Poplar the wrong way, and for a DWI. But the van never. I always talked my way out of everything. And talked the police out of this. It was a poor Germantown housewife, and my child was dyslexic, and I was just out having a drink. And see, we never stopped. A girlfriend of mine that we went out with Jim and her husband, and we went to the Hyatt Regency, and we ate and then had a few drinks, but I never wanted to stop. So the guys went home, and we went on, and we went to the Cockeyed Camel, and I kept drinking. See, I would not stop. I keep going till I passed out. The police stopped us. We stayed out there. I pleaded Germantown housewife, and he let us go. And the only thing that taught me was that I wasn't going to drink and drive again, and I didn't. I never drank and drove again. And my oldest son then was 5, and he'll be 21 in September. My drinking got progressively worse. We went through a bankruptcy. We've lost everything we had. And once I started, I didn't stop drinking. And I would drink every night, and a lot. I don't even think Jim's aware of how much I would drink. And then our third child was born with a hole in his heart. And he now is, he'll be 14 next month. And I remember laying in the hospital praying to God, if he just didn't have to have this open heart surgery, I'd never drink again. And the insanity of this disease is that I really meant it, but I wasn't ready. And I remember, as if it were yesterday, laying in Baptist East Hospital, and that when the pediatric cardiologist came in, I said, "If you know, I was just praying, if he didn't have to have this surgery and go to Birmingham, I'd never drink again." She came in, and she said that she thought he would be okay. I got to go home, but he had to stay. And I was drinking that night. And see, I couldn't help it because the obsession to drink was as bad as ever, and I couldn't stop. Even though I wanted to, and the insanity, it says insanity in the 12 and 12 is soundness of mind, and also doing the same thing over again and expecting different results. I really did want to quit when I said it, but I just wasn't able. So I need to do some more drinking. I drank after I, you know, during his feedings, and but I'd still get up and I'd go to work. January the 9th of 1990, my father in Nashville was in a car wreck. He got his tongue cut off, his right leg broken, and it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Brentwood. And the doctor called me in Memphis and said that your father's got a disease. And I went, oh, okay. And they said he's an alcoholic. And they couldn't operate on him after the wreck because his alcohol blood level was too high. but they were waiting till the next morning to sew his tongue and do some other surgery, and he had a broken leg. And they said, but he's going to die if he doesn't get help for this disease. Well, I was clueless of what an alcoholic was. I really did think it was somebody under a bridge. I didn't see that it was my father, and I was clueless that it was me, too. But He told me to get a book called Dying for a Drink that Dr. Anderson Spickard at Vanderbilt had written, and to read a chapter on intervention, and that my father, the only three ways an alcoholic's going to get into treatment is for the law, for him to hit a bottom, or for you to have an intervention. So we had an intervention. I learned that this is a real disease. I went to Nashville and I found out that I was not in the same end stages that my father is, but I had the exact same disease he has. And it's terminal and it's 100% fatal, and you got to have treatment for it. And no matter how you get there, you got to go there. I knew that day I was an alcoholic, and how God has worked for me in this program. I've got a twin sitting there, I've got an older brother, I got a mother, I mean, my whole family's a wreck. But the only person that heard this was me, and I was ready. So that day on, I said, I'm never going to drink again. They said, abstinence is the only way. I said, well, I'm going to quit. So I know what it's like living a dry drunk, because I did it. I know what it's like in the big book where it says self-knowledge will avail you nothing. I did it. I got a big book. I got Father Martin's Chalk Talk. I got any recovery tape. I learned it, read it, knew it. Didn't work. I didn't drink. My father stayed in treatment 2 days and said they were trying to kill him. But I found out this was a disease and I had it. And I'm looking around because it's hard for me to not believe that everybody couldn't see they had it. You know, I've got all my whole family's there. I'm going, y'all don't see y'all are alcoholic? Well, no, I just drink too much. But I was ready. And they said that you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink it. I was ready. I was thirsty from that day, but I was going to do it by myself. So I got this little book, and it's going to tell me precisely how to do it, and I'm going to do it by myself. Make a long story short, I was a raging maniac, workaholic, worked 60 hours a day. My kids wanted me to drink. I was a maniac. I'd walk in, I'd yell at them. I still remember my little girl at that time was probably 8, and I had no patience to even brush her hair. I just cut the snarls out instead of brushing her hair. I was a maniac. I'd come in and they didn't know if I was going to be yelling at them because they had their shoes on or their shoes off. I mean, I was totally self-will run riot. And I was the tornado every night in our house coming home. I worked in South Haven, Mississippi, and I believe for me, it took this self-will deal for me to surrender. And I was at a suicidal point. I knew how many Elavil to take one night while I was working at work, and I knew I'd be dead in 30 minutes. And I can look now and tell you how many experiences God has come into my life and all these series of events. He had Jenny Austin call me from Cumberland Heights, the treatment center that I'd been in Nashville, to learn about this disease that my father had. And after staying there a week, found out I had the same disease. She called me right at 9:05. The pharmacy closed at 9:00. And she said, Sherry, oh, and also I was going to a psychologist at this time because he was going to fix it too. I just thought me and him could do the deal, and I'll get Hazelton's guide, do a 4-step, and I'll be okay. She said, Sherry, if you're an alcoholic, only you know it, and you've got to go to AA. And she said, I'll give you 1 week to get a sponsor and call me back. And that was God doing for me, and I was ready. So I'm, you know, of course, I waited till that's a week Sunday I was going to meetings, but I didn't talk to anybody, but I'd go and sneak into meetings, go late, leave early. But I knew I had 1 week, and I was in so much pain, I'd have done anything. But I just couldn't find the right person, because I thought they had to be real educated and be a lot older, and my little brain thought I knew what I needed. And I walked into Germantown one night. That was my home group. And my sponsor was there, and it was 9:05. I looked, and I still didn't have a sponsor. And I went up to her after the meeting. And she said, we'll stay sober one day at a time. And she opened up her big book to page 25, and she said, there is no middle-of-the-road solution. She said, you'll call me every day at a certain time. We're going to get in this book. We'll work the steps, and we'll stay sober one day at a time. I said, well, okay. Now, this girl was 16 years younger than me, had never gone to college, but she had lost her child, and she loved this big book. And God was doing for me what I wouldn't have done for myself. Here again, God worked because I had no idea. She was a big book thumper. And she said, "What time do you get up?" And I said, "About 6. She said, "Okay, call me at 5:30. I said, she said, "But Sherry," she said, "I want you to," she said, "on page 86, it says, I want you to ask God to direct your thinking before your feet hit the ground." I said, "Okay." She said, "You just ask God to direct your thinking before your feet hit the ground." Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you that I've never had anybody tell me my whole life what to do. I did it myself. But this was the first time in my life I was willing to follow directions, and I was willing to do the discipline. And I didn't even know she was giving me discipline. I just did what she said because I was in so much pain. And it was such a freedom because I didn't have to figure it out. I just had to do it. I didn't even have to believe it. I just did it. So after about a week, she said, "And ask God to direct your thinking, and you're going to read the 24-hour on reflection." Because, see, I didn't talk to anybody. I wanted you to figure out what was going on inside of me, but I didn't want to talk about it. So Tracy said, well, read the 24-hour on reflection. Just read it. Ask God to direct your thinking and call me at 5:30. So, okay, I did. After a week, the next week at Germantown, I bought her an alarm clock, and I had it all wrapped up, and I walked in, and I was so excited, and she goes, "What is this?" I said, "Well, I bought you an alarm clock." And she goes, "For what?" I said, "I don't have to wake you up anymore." And she goes, she says, "Sherry, I'm not having you call me at 5:30 to wake me up. I'm having you call me at 5:30 for discipline." I said, "Discipline?" She goes, "Yeah." She said, "I don't need your alarm clock, but thank you anyway." Well, this whole process for me has been a day-to-day journey. She started at the preface of the big book, and she said, and I said, "No, I'm ready for the fourth step. I've got Hazelton's thing all filled. I had it all filled out. I had all 25 pages filled in, and here was my Hazel." I said, "Here, I'm ready for my fifth step. Here's my fourth step." And this was the first time we met, and she said, "Oh, let me see that." And I said, "Here, I got it all filled out." And she goes, she said, "Okay." She said, "Well, this is where you're going to have to decide. You're either going to have to do it like the big book says it or like Hazelton. If you want to do it like Hazelton, you got to have somebody else. Or if there's a page in here, it's going to show you how to do it. If you want to do it like page 63, then we'll do it one day at a time." She said, "So what do you want to do?" I said, "I'm going to do it your way. I'll do big book." I said, "But don't you want to read it?" She said, "No, go." We were outside at a park. She said, "Go take it and throw it in that trash can." I said, "But you hadn't even read it yet. I mean, it's taken me a month to do." She said, "Throw it away." And I threw it away. And we started at the preface of the big book. And we started reading the book at the preface and going through it and learning what the thing means and what this whole deal, it's been a process. I've had to unlearn all my thinking. See, so I've been drinking for 25 years at age 13, so I've never known how to think right. So I had to unlearn this thinking. And everything in the book, it just hit me. It says in there, what at first seemed a flimsy read proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. That was my sponsor for me. She reached out her hand to me. She didn't know me. And that was all I had to hold on to. And she did show me a design for living that worked. And it all came out of this book. And keep going to meetings one day at a time. And she showed me what this thing does. She said, "You know, it says precisely and exactly how to do it." I said, "God. Well, if it says exactly and precisely, for the first time in my life, I was going to take this book literally. If it said to sit in a room for an hour after you do the fifth step, I took my watch. It was an hour. I did it exactly like this book said. And I didn't have to change it because it worked. And see, I knew that my little rationalizing mind could change anything. I said, "Well, it doesn't mean this." She said, "What does it say, Sherry?" And I would read the words, and it's exactly what it says. When we came to the third step, I had never gotten on my knees with anybody, but it said the third step prayer to offer God, and we did it with Tracy, and that was a very humbling experience for me. But I was willing to surrender to God's will, whatever it was, and it was working so far. See, now I'm staying sober. She's teaching me how to live. At every red light on the way home, see, I was self-will run right. She'd say, "Okay, Sherry, when you walk in your house, you're a maniac." I go, "Yeah." Well, then you've got to learn restrain a tongue and pen. I said, well, how do you do that? She said, well, at every red light from South Haven to Germantown, you're going to read the Serenity Prayer at every red light. Well, I didn't know the Serenity Prayer, but it was on the back of our meeting book. So I would read it. I had it cut out and it was on my steering wheel, you know, and I'd read it at every red light. She said, then when you go home, you don't say anything. My page 67 is torn out of my book because she said, with my husband, to avoid argument and retaliation, I had to go to every day because, see, I thought he was my problem. She said, go to page 67. What does it say? I said, avoid argument and retaliation. We don't treat sick people this way. And I wore it out, but it worked. And at one day at a time, as I did what this book said, it worked. And the neat thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is, even if I didn't believe it at first, even if I acted as if, it worked. And so anybody that's new in here, I am living proof that if you keep doing it one day at a time, it's going to work. And you will come to believe. And just like this dude with 23 years that's just as enthusiastic as he was when he came in, there is more. And I do know there's more because I've been given more. As I went on in this journey, Tracy moved on, and I'm still staying sober, and my kids are feel more comfortable around me. They don't dodge me when I come home. They want to talk to me now. I'm changing. I really am reacting. My little girl, even now, if she thinks I'm mad, I used to count to 10 or say the Serenity Prayer before I would even talk to them because I couldn't even sit down and do math. I had no patience and no tolerance. And they go, God grant me the serenity. You know, they say it back to me knowing that that's what I'm thinking because it's become an active part of their lives. My oldest is 21 now. I've got a 16-year-old daughter, and then I've got the 14-year-old, soon-to-be 14-year-old son. And they've lived this program with me, and they know it works. They know that I'm here. They know they were going to say a prayer at 8 o'clock because I was going to be nervous. They know that I have a lot of people in my life that I talk to that are alcoholics, and they're a big part of my life. Jenny Austin, the lady in Nashville, has been a real big part of my life also. It says in the big book that unless an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life by working selflessly and sacrificing for others, he's not going to be able to handle the low spots and trials that lie ahead. And here again, I experienced this 3 summers ago in Atlanta during the Olympics. Jenny was dying of cancer, and my head knew this, but my heart wasn't ready for it. And I was in Atlanta. And when the big book says we'll have certain times when we'll have no mental defense against that first drink, that's happened to me twice since I've been sober, and it happened to me in June 3 years ago. And God was doing again for me what I couldn't do for myself. I woke up that morning. I still do the same thing. I'm in Atlanta. I've got my family, my twins' family. We're all there. I get up early. I get up before everybody else. I pray, ask God to direct my thinking. I read my books, and I sit there and I pray. And I was the most spiritually connected that morning out in the lake, Lanier. My nephews had asked me to get on a boat, which I don't ever get on a boat, but I said, okay, I'll get on a boat. I got on a boat, and I was in an accident and broke my back and was in the most excruciating pain I've ever been in my entire life. It took them about an hour to get me from the lake to the dock, and it was the most excruciating pain I'd ever been in, and I never thought about a drink. The physical pain was unreal, and I really, when it first happened, I thought I was paralyzed. My hands didn't even move, but then after they got me to the deck, my waist didn't, I was dead from the waist down, and I thought I was going to be paralyzed. Still in pain, because it knocked the breath out of me, but the pain, I couldn't even move, and the boat just taking me was just like, I can't even express it, but I never thought about drinking. Make a long story short, it took them about 2 hours to get me up to the cabin, and of course, the alcohol is going to run the show. They don't need to get an ambulance. You just pick me up and carry me, and I'll be okay. You know, some things don't change. So they're all doing it, trying to carry me up in the air to get me up to the cabin. I wasn't in the cabin probably 5 minutes when they called from Cumberland Heights and said that Jenny had died about 2 hours before that. And that's when the obsession hit. I wanted to drink like I'd never wanted to drink before in my entire life, but I couldn't walk and get it. Now, all them are drinking, my husband, twin, sister-in-law, everybody in the cabin's drinking. There's enough drinking and there's enough alcohol for me, but I couldn't get to it because I couldn't walk. So I'm laying there and I'm dying and I'm crying and I'm not a crier, but the pain was just, the obsession was more than I could, I wanted to drink. And my daughter was standing there. I said, Natalie, please go in there and get me a beer. I said, please. She said, no, you go get it. I said, Natalie, please. I said, please just go get it for me. She said, no, why don't you call Tracy? Now, I hadn't talked to Tracy in about 3 years. And she got me the big book. Because any time I ever got in trouble, even when they were little, they'd go get this book, and they knew that I'd read it, and I'd be better. This book is magic to my kids, too. They don't know what it is, but they know it's magic. Then she said, you go get it. And see, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. She had enough Alateen or Alatot or Alasomething in her that she wouldn't go. None of my other family members were, so I just laid there and suffered. And she said, this is torture for you, isn't it? I said, you'll never know. But I got through it. And I was going to tell you, I guess at the end of my drinking, I was drinking about, I forget this, but I would leave the pharmacy and get a 12-pack in South Haven, and I'd drink it before I went to sleep. I'd drink like 144 ounces in less than 2 hours and smoke 2 packs of cigarettes, and I had to have it, and I couldn't stop. And I'd be so full, and I couldn't stop. So when it talks about that obsession and that allergy, see, I relate to that because I was there. I couldn't stop. And I knew if I had one drink, I couldn't stop till I passed out. And I didn't want it, but I had to have it. Made it through that experience, and here the big book was showing me again that to make it through that low point, God had a sense of humor. When I got back to Memphis, I'm in a body cast from here to here, and I can get up for 1 hour a day, and I still have a little pride and didn't want people to pick me up, but I'd go to a meeting, and they'd take me, and I'd sit there in the meeting, and I was still grateful. You know, I was still grateful. Ever since I've been in this program, I've been grateful. I've gone through bad times, but I usually come out still grateful because I remember where I came from. And God put 2 women in my life. I was off work for 2 months. And to handle these low spots, He put 2 new women in my life that I got to start at the very beginning of the big book and go through it just like I was shown. And I wouldn't have had time had I not been off work for 2 months. And to go through this and work the steps and live this book and learn what it says. So God again was doing for me. You know, I blame them now for my broken back. It was all their fault. I wouldn't have broken it if God hadn't put them in my life. But when y'all were talking last night about God putting the people in our life when we need them, that has been my experience. God put Mary in my life, and she's got 28 years, and she does this deal every day too. 1 day at a time, and after 28 years, she gets up, asks God direct her thinking. She reads this stuff and prays, and she knows there's more, and she believes in the big book. And then Louise is the guru, and she's got 37 years, and she's still coming back, and she's showing Mary, and then I'm showing them, and it's just a heck of a deal. It is tenfold. The steps, Tracy took me all through the steps, and when I was doing the 4-step, the big book way, it was real hard for me because I'd never talked to anybody. If there's anybody here that hadn't gone that far, you just got to do it. It's just the price you pay. You just got to do this stuff. It doesn't say if you like it or not. You just have to do it. But it will be worth it. And there is no middle of the road. There are no half measures. I had to do it all, and the people I work with have to do it all, and it works. They all get the promises because we all will get them as a result of doing this thing 1 day at a time. There's a paragraph in the big book. I couldn't say enough about the big book because everything in here is me. Everything in here, I'll read it, and every time I read it with somebody else, I see something more. And every time I'm in a bad place, you know, Mary can tell me what page to go to, and there's more. God either is or He isn't. I mean, it's all here in this book, and it was written for me. The paragraph that hit me the most is the one that, to me, sums up all the steps in the program as I see it, is the one that says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God and admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past and give freely of what you find and join us. We will be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and many of us will join you as we trudge the road to happy destiny. I love this deal. This program has saved my life. I could talk for the next hour of things God has made me aware of things now. Just aware of the trees, just aware of my kids, that my kids have feelings, that when they come home, there are no big deals. They don't have to brush their teeth right now. It doesn't have to be exactly like I used to think it had to be. It's the thinking that had to change. You see, when I came in, I wasn't drinking. It was the thinking. So I have to do these things every day because I haven't had a lobotomy yet. My brain is still the same. If I stay away from you guys are the closest to God I'm going to get. And God speaks through y'all. So if I get away from y'all, I'm going to go right back where I was because I can't do this thing by myself. When it says we, even when Tracy said we agnostics, I said, I'm not agnostic. She said, well, don't you think you know what your kids think? I said, well, sure I do. She said, well, only God knows that. See, I really thought that when I came in here that I knew what you thought, that you needed to be like I thought you ought to be. This thing of letting go and letting God was a concept that I was clueless over. To me, it seems the longer I stay in here, the more there is and the more I learn. And I hope at first I had to have enough pain for the willingness, and thank God for the pain. Thank God for every inch of pain I ever had. And even if I'm going through pain, my head knows it's going to be better when I get on the other side. I still don't like it, but I do know it's going to get better. And I've got a lot of people that'll sit there and enforce it to me. It's going to get better. Well, I still believe what they believe, and it works. And it's been an unconditional love from day one. I walked into that first meeting that I went to in Germantown and cried the whole time. Didn't know one person there. Didn't know their last name. Had nothing to do with their stories, but I felt an unconditional love like I'd never felt before. And it's still there. And I felt it here. The spirit here is unreal because y'all been doing it longer. You've got more experiences and you mean it more than what I've ever been around. I love this deal. I'm going to end this, if I can see, reading the last something in the very end of the book. I may not have talked long enough, but I think it's all I'm supposed to say. I'm going to end with this. It says, the only real freedom a human being can ever know is doing what you ought to do because you want to do it. This great experience that released me from the bondage of hatred and replaced it with love is really just another affirmation of the truth that I know. I get everything I need in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I need, I get. And when I get what I need, I invariably find that it was just what I wanted all the time. I love this deal. Thank you.